Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
What a song. I'm glad people didn't write in to say that should be a Friday song.
That should be an everyday song, but people exactly. will find out a little bit more. There is a reason behind it as well, but they'll find out more details tomorrow. Okay. What's going on in Israel?
So a few things to start off with. We've got another episode in our ongoing series of Iran Check Your Mezuzahs. And this time it's about petrol stations in Iran, which apparently malfunctioned yesterday as a result of a reported massive cyber attack. Now, this is not simply going into the annals of government, into the nuclear program, into things which are not visible to the general public. This is giving the public a little bit of a taste of getting back at the Iranian regime. And it seems as if though there was a lot of disruption at the refueling system of petrol stations, caused by a cyber attack, according to the official Iranian broadcast medium. And this is not the first time that Iran has experienced issues with refueling at petrol stations. But what interested me was that apparently the cyber attack somehow focused on only certain refueling. So in other words, only those people who used only sales of petrol for people using smart cars who were entitled to buy cheaper rationed fuel, that was disrupted. Otherwise, you could buy still buy petrol apparently at higher prices without any problem, which I guess didn't necessarily make people in Iran feel happy. But as I say, this is an ongoing thing. One of the other interesting attacks that happened in Iran, which we didn't really have much of an opportunity to talk about, was back in July when there was a huge hack on the train system in Iran. And at that stage, Checkpoint Technologies, which obviously an Israeli company, reported that it was an organization called Indra, which is an Iranian organization that actually attacked the train system, causing information to be wiped out. Malware was implemented on the system, which wiped the entire data system and on the critical infrastructure of the train system. It locked users out of machines and made recovery processes complicated, changed passwords, replaced wallpaper to custom messages, which were crafted by the attackers. And of course, this particular attack on the fuel system, on the gas, on the petrol stations, is in the first instance being attributed either to Israel or to the United States, as you could already have guessed. But apparently local Iranian anti-regime groups are also being mentioned as possible instigators. Apparently there were messages posted on some systems that were hacked which addressed Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, directly demanding to know where is the gas, things like that. So I think just another unfortunate glitch in the Iranian system, which potentially could lead the Ayatollahs to check their mezuzahs, because there have been a number of these mishaps going on in Iran. And just another little story before we get into the main guts of things that we want to talk about is just a fantastic piece of information that the first Israeli private jet landed in Saudi Arabia yesterday, landed in Riyadh. We are not sure who was on the plane or why the plane actually landed there, but this came just one day after an Emirati royal jet landed at Bin Gurion Airport, which came from Saudi Arabia as well. So now all of a sudden we're seeing actually direct flights between Israel and Saudi Arabia, not commercial flights, obviously, and there's still no diplomatic relations, but a much more relaxed situation, which follows the opening of the Saudi Arabian airspace to Israeli flights, not only to Al flights trying to get to India. It cuts 2 hours off the flight time for Al to get to India now as a result of flying over Saudi Arabia. Also flights going to the United Arab Emirates. And of course, allowing the Israeli Air Force planes to use Saudi airspace in the event that they might need to get to Iran, for example. Definitely a warming of ties, even though the diplomatic relations are not quite there yet.
Incredible. Really, really just wonderful. I can't say that enough. Israel could begin vaccinating children aged 5 to 11 years old in that category after the FDA experts recommended a Pfizer vaccine for younger children. So what does this mean now for Israel's vaccination program?
Well, I think it means a lot. I mean, let's just take a step back for a moment. We know that Israel has gone headlong into vaccinating people. This is part of Israel's strategy on COVID. Three vaccinations have already been authorized for people who are eligible to receive both the initial two vaccinations and then also at least 5 months after the second vaccination, also the booster vaccine. There's already talk about a potential fourth vaccination. Now that we've rolled out the third one, people are wondering what will happen next. But let's not forget that 1.2 million Israelis are between the ages of 5 and 11. So even if a very, very high percentage of people who have been eligible to be vaccinated up until now actually have taken up on the vaccine, it still means that overall, Israel's percentage of people vaccinated across the whole population is relatively lower than many other countries because something like one third of Israel's population is younger people below the age of 15. And so the result of that is that as an overall percentage of the population, we still have a way to catch up. And now with the 5 to 11 year olds potentially going to be authorized very, very soon, it is expected that Israel will begin vaccinating that particular age group potentially by the middle of November. There has been talk about it already even before this recommendation was made by the FDA experts. Let's remember that even though they've made their recommendation and it was a very overwhelming recommendation, 17 out of the 18 people on the advisory committee voted in favor with one abstention. So nobody voting against, and a very, very strong positive vote. Even though that has come through, this doesn't mean that the FDA has approved it yet. That approval is only expected probably next week, sometime perhaps on November the 2nd or the 3rd, in which case Israel will then begin to scramble, I suspect, to very, very quickly try to vaccinate the 5 to 11-year-olds. I understand that this vaccine is slightly modified. It's not the same one that that has been administered to older people, to older children and to adults up until now. It's slightly modified. But let's bear in mind as well that 10 Israeli children have already died of COVID-19 up until now, and many, many more have suffered from the so-called PIMS, this disease that affects young people, even though they might not have shown any symptoms during the time that they actually contracted the disease. So, you know, we are concerned as well about not only the suffering of COVID-19, but also potentially long COVID. And we're also concerned about people having to stay away from school, and the cost of having to keep quarantined is having on not only the school system, but indeed on the economy as well. So a whole survey has been conducted amongst parents of children of that age. Something like 50% of those questioned already indicated that they would wish their children to be vaccinated as quickly as possible. Then there's a whole group of others who are uncertain, something like 20-odd percent, who want to consult with their pediatricians and who want to understand what other experts might have to say about this. There is, of course, a core group of people who are very, very strongly anti-vax and will not allow their children to be vaccinated under any circumstances. There are, of course, some concerns, but interestingly, I read somewhere that Israel had conducted some sort of an experiment involving children who were immunocompromised, and something like 70-odd children in this particular age category were vaccinated, none of whom showed any side effects at all as a result of having been vaccinated, and none of whom actually contracted COVID. So I think that that was a very, very successful trial and very instructive in terms of conducting something on the ground. But this seems to now this seems quite likely to be included in Israel's overall strategy of vaccinating everybody, all the way down to the age of 5, pretty much, when the FDA approves this vaccination, hopefully within the next week or so.
I'd love to hear from listeners. 3451906189951019. Would you vaccinate your 5 to 11 year old? I'm fascinated to see your thoughts on that. The U.S. administration has criticized Israel's plan to authorize 3,000 housing units in the West Bank. What are the implications? What will the implications of this decision be?
So obviously it creates some tension between the U.S. government, the U.S. administration, and the Israeli government. Nothing that we haven't experienced or being able to deal with before. This decision to potentially move forward with constructing the new housing units within the West Bank, I think, needs to be put into a certain context. In the first instance, the land authority had already published a tender for 1,300 new homes earlier this week. It is expected that that may well be expanded to 3,000. In conjunction with this decision has been a decision as well to authorize something like 1,300 new housing units within Palestinian areas, also within the same area under Israeli control. And all of these authorizations have been made only within existing boundaries. In other words, within settlements that have already established boundaries, already existing ones, just simply to increase the number of housing units within the boundaries. And there is no approval at this time, at least, to use land which is outside of the existing boundaries of the existing settlements. And it's important to point that out, because it doesn't mean that there's any encroachment of land not on the side of the Jewish people living there and not on the side of the Arab people living in those areas nearer to each other. But of course, as far as the U.S. is concerned, they feel that they're deeply concerned about the Israeli government plan to advance these homing units. And they think that it's completely inconsistent with efforts to try to lower tensions and to ensure calm, and damages the prospects for a two-state solution. That's the official statement from the U.S. administration. It does reflect to some degree the conflicts that are inherent within the current governing coalition, because Naftali Bennett, representing as he does religious Zionist party and coming from that sort of a background, will be under massive amounts of pressure from the religious Zionist parties to agree the construction of these housing units. And the committee to approve these units hasn't met since last year sometime. So there's been a hiatus, there's been a stop, lack of approvals for a fairly extended period of time. And he's coming under a lot of pressure to convene the relevant committee to approve these housing units. Of course, the left side of the governing coalition will be very unhappy about it, that they feel that this is an unnecessary step in the wrong direction and that it does potentially increase the tensions. In truth, I'm not sure whether it really makes a huge amount of difference. I think there is a certain amount of inherent tension anyway. This will be raised to the press. I don't think it's going to necessarily exacerbate any situation, and I certainly don't think it makes a huge difference to the prospects of a two-state solution, or potentially the lack of prospects of moving towards a two-state solution as expressed by the U.S. government. I just think it's another blip along the road, which will not ultimately make the hugest difference.